Ooh.
I'm going to cut that out. I don't know why I said that.
How you doing, everybody? Welcome to Righty's House on Ringer FC. Hope all's well with you all and you are happy and healthy. Going to touch on online abuse because it's there again. Arsenal Man United. We're going to have a little chat about Arsenal Man United. And I'm going to give some flowers to Patrick Bamford because he deserves them. Well done this weekend, Patrick Bamford. And my guests this week are Ryan Hun and Mr. Carl Anker.
This episode is brought to you by Atlassian. Atlassian software like Jira, Confluence, and Loom help power the collaboration needed for teams to accomplish what would otherwise be impossible alone. Because individually we're great, but together we're so much better. That's why millions of teams around the world, including 75% of the Fortune 500, trust Atlassian software for everything from space exploration and green energy to delivering pizzas and podcasts. Whether you're a team of 2, 200, or 2 million, Atlassian software is built to keep you connected and moving together as one.
This episode is brought to you by Anytime Fitness. We're not all professional athletes, but we all have health goals. That's why Anytime Fitness gives you access to personalized plans and support from a coach. Plus, you can track your training, nutrition, and recovery progress with the Anytime Fitness app, just like the pros. With 24/7 access to more than 5,000 gyms worldwide, get more from your gym membership. Visit anytimefitness.com to try it for free today. Terms, conditions, restrictions all apply. See website for details.
How you doing, Ryan? How you doing, Carl?
We're nodding on an audio podcast.
You're not on an audio podcast. It doesn't work. But like, you know what? Is everything cool?
Yeah, man. Yeah, I'm good. I'm good.
Snowing here.
Is it snowing? Oh, beautiful.
Yeah, it was big. We had a big snow on Friday and it's stuck and it's just kind of just topping up every now and again.
I done one of those things yesterday. I done one of those scenarios where, you know, when someone says, how you doing? Everything cool? And I said, actually, no.
Oh, no.
You know something? I know that there's people out there listening to this who are probably much worse off than me. And you always have to think like that. I thought like that even not being in a pandemic, just in normal every day. But you know, when you just don't feel good, I don't feel good. And I'm not going to, and what I'd done when they said, so how are you doing? I gave them about 15 minutes of why I wasn't. And you know, when they're trying to, they're actually just asking just because it's just a conversational one. But I said, no, actually, because at the moment with everything what's going on, with everything, what you read, what's going on with people, with how I feel at the minute, you know, seeing what my kids are going through, seeing what people are going through, what my brother's going through. Like I said, I just think that people shouldn't, don't hold that in, you know, when you're feeling like that, simply because in this time, because like I say, we do our stuff, then you have to, then you're back to staying in the house, doing your stuff. The girls, my kids are doing the stuff, my missus is doing the stuff. If you're feeling like that, you've got to get it out in some way. And I don't know if I'd done that on purposely, but I felt a lot better when I just said, yeah. So now I just, bam, you can get back on with it. So I'm just hoping that, you know, you just ease through the week again, because we don't know. It's the fact that we don't know what's happening, when it's going to happen, and that, and you don't know when to expect it to stop. So when those moments come, and I'm not no mental expert, but you kind of embrace it a little bit. Don't feel like you have to not say to people, no, I don't feel great. Speak.
Yeah, definitely. Yeah.
Speak. Tell people, because like that is where it all gets suppressed, and then people start getting into this kind of like depressive state. Speak, man. Don't be fucking afraid to speak. Tell people you don't feel good, even when they don't really want to know, but they're saying, hey, feeling not great.
Hey, do you want some good news though? It's episode 15. I don't know why that felt like it's
nice.
And I was thinking before we get onto like the actual topics that we're doing,
that's not
any favorite number 15s
number 15
throughout your lifetime.
Probably Ray Parler was number 15, I think.
I was going to say Stefan Schwartz.
Was it Stefan Schwartz? It might have been Stefan Schwartz.
Yeah, he had it before. He had it before Ray, I think.
Yes, yes, man.
He was actually, I think, a bit of a pioneer for the existential yellow.
He was a real tough tackling guy. It's a nice touch, man, for Stefan. You know what? Can I just say while we're on Arsenal, I think that this transfer window, right? What do you think? I think it's in a pandemic, because some of those players probably would have been sold. I think it's pretty good.
I do as well. So obviously Arsenal don't really have a Michael Edwards type character there who can all of a sudden get 45 million euros for someone who you didn't even know was still there. So I think the priority for Arsenal was trimming the wage bill because their wage bill has been so bloated for so long. And there were a lot of people there who weren't playing who were getting paid a hell of a lot of money. Mm. It was like twofold. If you can't get transfer fees for these people, make the squad more streamlined from a wages point of view and from a personnel point of view. And I think they've done pretty well, to be honest.
I think, Carl, as well, I feel for Reece. I think something needs to happen for Reece. I'm pleased for people like for Joe and that. I'm delighted for Joe. But like for Reece, I worry. But I think that when you do the business that Arsenal have done, the bad business, what they've done for the years, at some stage, you're going to have to pay for those bad decisions. And I think that's what they're doing now. If they have to pay people and get them out, then you have to do it just to give Mikel the pieces that he needs.
Yeah, this January was just one of the weirdest transfer windows we've seen. Because, I mean, normally in January, it's hard to buy. Mm. And now you've got this added layer of COVID-affected finances. And now you've got this sort of half and half of maybe the Euros are going to happen, maybe they might not happen. So you've got some players that do want to move because they want to get football in so they can do certain things just in case they want to get into the national team. But also we don't know. So like the fact that Dele's still at Spurs is a bit surprising to me.
Mm. That really is quite sad. That's sad. Watching Gareth Bale play is sad. Watching a player like that, watch a player of that caliber play like that and going out like that.
I mean, for Bale, one, it's the injuries, right? So you can have all the talent and you can do all the ice baths and eat all the right foods and whatnot. But if your hamstring goes ping, your hamstring goes ping. So I think there's that. And then there's just, I mean, we still don't know what was going on in those years at Real Madrid with Zidane and whatnot. And then, I mean, yeah, I'm not going to lie, I was pretty sad watching that hour against Brighton. And Gareth Bale just couldn't get past the player. I'm going, okay, well, all right. That's you now. You're gonna go have your Euros with Wales, and that's going to be a really good moment.
He doesn't seem to have the energy, man. Do you think if the fans are in, that might have given him something because he looks like he needs something.
I think so, because we were talking about this on Stadio actually, and I kind of just came up with a bit of a theory on the fly that had been on my mind about how I'm starting to wonder what the actual, in addition to everything the players are going through. The fact that fans aren't there on a sustained level now, it's been almost a year. I do wonder how that's affected them as well, because having, like, Carl, you've been to games behind closed doors. We all have, actually. Right, he's covered them on TV. I've done some in Germany, and the thing that I found most interesting when I was there was that it kind of feels like you're playing on another planet. It feels like you're playing separate from real life.
Yeah.
If you're feeling like that and you're just sat there watching, imagine if that's your day-to-day, like, last-minute winners don't get met with the same level of jubilation because there's no one there to experience it. So I do wonder whether there's just a bit of a kind of like, fuck, none of us are actually really massively enjoying this that much at the moment. And I think that could have contributed to maybe the Bale thing at Spurs not working out as well as it could.
I hope it's something like that. I hope it's something like that. And I hope it's just not him just going through the motions, because it's very easy for people to just say that, just, oh, he's going through the motions. When he came back, I was fucking ecstatic for him because the way he's been treated in Real Madrid, Carl. It's one of those where you see him on the bench, he's not done that, he wants to play. And I was thinking, who was it he blasted past, scored one of the greatest goals ever in the derby? Was it
Bartra? Oh, in the Copa del Rey?
Yeah. Or Mark Bartra.
And you think to yourself, the way he was treated by the Real Madrid fans when he was capable of doing that and what he could have been capable of, is that all he wanted was love, surely. In the end, like Moussa said, it's all about love, man.
He is, man.
I suppose it's reading what people say about him. I can't help but take it personally because he was at Southampton at a young age, the same time as Bradley was. And when I used to see him, I used to see Bradley and that. So you kind of get that kind of love for him. Mm-hmm. But talking about that, and then when you see what people say about him, I just don't like reading it. And to be honest, it's perfect because the online abuse, like what Marcus Rashford done. And I was going to say to you, Carl, as well, especially about the way he dealt with it and the way how do you think he dealt with that? Was that good for you?
Yeah, I mean, I work with Marcus Rashford sort of now. So I think the way he's carrying himself, I think what's very important for Marcus is that he's always true to himself. And the fact he says, you know, he's a proud black man and he didn't want to share the screenshots. And these screenshots of Rashford Brucey got were circulating, but he said he didn't want to share them.
I think that was a good move.
he didn't want to give him oxygen. I think,
yeah, because the person who's doing it, Carl, are doing it for that particular reason. They want their thing to be shown on there. They want,
yeah, that. And I think that's true to himself. I don't want to say it's right or wrong because, you know, I've got racist comments on social media. You've got racist comments on social media, and a lot of the time I don't want to share it. I don't want to do screenshots, but there are some times where I do. And I don't, you know, it's not a good or bad thing. It's just what feels right for you in that moment, I think. And I think this is really difficult because we've been here. It feels like we're here every four months, right?
But we will. It's one of those that will always come back. It never goes.
Yeah. And Marcus Rashford was the most tweeted at athlete in 2020. He got loads of racist abuse after he missed the penalty at the start of the 2019-2020 season, and then Twitter tried a new principle. And it's really hard right now because when I saw what happened, what those messages went out to Axel, to Nzebe, to Anthony Martial, to Marcus Rashford, I had a moment where I went up for a walk for like an hour yesterday, and I came in and I checked my phone, and then I found out someone was racially abusing Reece James. And I was in my house going, more racism? More? Just sort of,
I took my
eye off the ball for an hour, and it was more racism. I was really, I was just like, okay, this is. And again, I always bring up the Toni Morrison quote about the function of racism as a distraction, right? It's this idea of it's trying to knock you off your pivot, and it's trying to stop you from doing what you want to do. And you know, I'm talking to you, Ian, and you've been subject to racist abuse for years and years and years and years. I've been subject to racist abuse for years, and I know this isn't really going to stop for a while. And it's that thing of, on one hand, I understand that part of my job as in one reason why I'm on the planet Earth seems to be I'm going to have to confront this several times. And there's also sometimes where I don't want to. I don't want to have to, every 6 months, have to explain why white people can't use the N-word. I don't have to explain what the pace and power thing is. And one thing that got to me about the social media abuse was the conversation immediately turned to what can the social media companies do?
Yeah.
And it was, let's talk about ID verification. Let's talk about this. And I thought, you know, the problem isn't the fact that there are anonymous accounts sending racist abuse. The problem is there are accounts sending racist abuse, right? And I think, I mean, my mindset is very much informed by something Musa wrote a couple of years ago. Musa once wrote this thing about how very often we think of racism as something that needs to be fought, as if it's one big discrete thing, like it's a big concrete block or a big monster that you can punch in a cartoon. And Musa said, racism actually is like a very subtle, small disease. It works like cholera in the water. And it's not enough to just say, we're going to do education, or we're going to do this one big thing. And you can see there are a lot of very nice people, a lot of well-meaning people go, we're going to do this, this, and this. Simple. And I'm like, well, racism is a very deep, complex thing that's lasted for millennia, right? You can't beat it with a simple idea.
No.
And I don't know if the word beat it is the best way to do it. I've got a quote here from Howard Zinn. And he said, we don't have to engage in grand heroic actions to participate in the process of change. Small acts, when multiplied by millions of people, can transform the world.
That's it.
I think that's the one, right? There was definitely a point in time where in the 90s, people thought it was acceptable to use one word or this word or this word. And it was the small, subtle work we all did together to get to a point where, like, no, I don't want to use that word anymore. And I think that's what we should be doing, is trying to take a multifaceted approach. It's trying to understand that, yeah, we have got people out there who think it's really fun to send monkey emojis to football players from their toilet. And that has to be stopped, right? We have to get to a point where we understand that's a bad thing. And we do already, right? That's why we're having this conversation. We also have to get to a point where we understand subtler things, sort of like why certain words keep constantly being used towards black football players, right? We also have to get better at not only not constantly framing this conversation just in terms of football.
Mm-hmm.
And I don't know how long this will take. I don't think this is going to be over anytime soon. I'm sure we'll have a podcast maybe when we're doing Righty South episode 30 and we'll have a similar conversation. I want to believe things are getting better.
We'll be deeper than 30, I think.
Yeah. And I think we've got a lot of very good listeners that understand some of the obvious problems we've got with emojis and whatnot, but there is constant work that needs to be done, and there's constant work that needs to be untangled from our mind. Like, I think a lot of it is like Japanese knotweed, where it's just there and it can just constantly wrap around your brain. And even if you don't realize what you're doing, you can be helping really uncomfortable situations continue. And I have a lot of very nice, well-meaning people that go, oh my God, I saw that racist abuse. I can't imagine what that feels like. Mm. I understand why they say that, because they say that because they want to make me feel heard. They want to make me feel at ease. And a lot of the time I'm going to, you know, it's people with a lot more power, a lot more money, a lot more access to resources saying, I can't imagine how that feels. And I really want to say, I need you to try.
Yeah.
Because if you can try and imagine how it feels, you can try and imagine how to stop this.
Yeah.
Right? I don't want a politician to say, I don't know what that feels. I don't want the CEO of a company to say, I don't know what that feels. I want a CEO to go, that is out of order. Mm. Tell me what you need me to do, and I'm going to go out and do it now. And I think those are the processes I need to get to in my life to get easier, if that makes sense.
It makes my shoulders slump. I think as well, to be honest, I think it was one of the factors that made me feel a little bit down again. Simply because I can't understand how one person has the power to reach someone like that, and it baffles me. It baffles me that someone would want to use a platform this powerful to do that. Because at the end of the day, I know it's coming. If I put up anything that is anti-racist, you know, LGBT, anything, I don't look at the comments.
Mm-hmm.
Because honestly, you look at the comments and it's just horrible, man. And you know something, it's again, you know, you try not to. It's like when you're younger, when you got the scab and the scab's coming over and it's really nice, but you think, let me just peel that bit off. That's a little bit, but it's nice. That's what the comments do to you. You know it hurts a little bit, but sometimes you see something nice and you see some support and you think, yes, but then you see the ones that come that you feel, I don't know if we're ever going to be able to help someone like you if you can say something like this.
Mm.
And they're so confused about what injustice is. I found it unbelievable to understand. People couldn't understand what Colin Kaepernick was doing. I said, people surely cannot be that ignorant as to understand why that's being done, why the knee's being taken. And then you see it again, and I just feel that we'll probably find the person that that abused Marcus Rashford, and you'll find it'll probably be some 17, 18-year-old who people say, well, he should know better. Yeah, of course he should. Anybody should. You know, I mean, there's no excuse. But at the same time, he probably, deep down, feels how he feels, but he just knows that, yeah, but what's going to happen to me?
Yeah. I think that's a big one as well. It's this, I think we've got a lot of well-meaning people go, I can't imagine what that feels like, or they say it doesn't make sense. And like, there are racists out there, right? Mm. And there are people out there that want to be racist. And the people out there that like saying stuff, they say stuff not because they're uneducated or because they're stupid or whatever. They're saying that because they want to hurt people, right?
It does hurt, man. It does hurt.
Last week, I joined Ian Wright and I joined Sean on a TV segment on Premier League. And the video went out on YouTube and whatnot. And one of the comments went, oh, look, three black people discussing football. Must be a diversity hire. That person isn't uneducated. That person isn't ignorant. That person knows what a diversity hire is. That person said that thing to be hurtful. That person said that thing to be nasty. And I can go to that person, why did you say that? I can go to that person, why did you want to say that? And they're like, well, I want to say it. Oh, that's what I think it is, right? And this is a function of racism and distraction. I can spend an hour or 2 hours or whatever and try and argue my point that I'm not diversity hire, I'm this and this and this, and try and prove my humanity. Or I can simply go, I'm going to walk away from this and I'm going to go spend my time we people, I want to celebrate.
See, yeah, but the thing is, Carl, and this is, again, Rai, what people have to understand when you try to let them understand that is that you read that. Carl's just told me that. That stays with me now, because then you start thinking about it as, well, the Premier League have not done that. They've not got Kelly there as the only white person. And then me, an ex-footballer, has played at a certain level. My son, Sean's played at a certain level. Carl has written and is qualified to be sat there to explain what we're talking about. Why does the colour of our skin have anything to do with what has got us to be sitting on those seats? And the only thing it is, right, is that people are not used to seeing it enough. So when they see it, in their eyes, they're like, I guarantee you, they'll be like, what the fuck? Hey, first thing you're thinking, hey, three black guys. That's what they'll think. Right.
I think for a lot of white people, speaking as, you know, straight white guy, for people who have never experienced discrimination or abuse based on their skin color or their gender, they confuse equality with their own oppression. Mm. You know, you see it with the whole, like, we want our countries back. We want this back. We want this back. It's just like, no, you don't really. You just don't want to be held up to the same standards that women, members of the LGBTQ community, people of color have to adhere to in order to get the same opportunities that white people have got for decades, centuries, millennia, whatever. That's why that person's saying something like that. Because fundamentally, in their head, they attach what's gone on in the last year or so with seeing three black people on a TV program, which should be, in my opinion, abnormal in no way. They put the two and two together and they say, oh, that must be why. But it's just like, what are you going to do? Like, put, I'm not going to name names here, but I think we could all pull out a load of white pundits who are nowhere near the level of you guys and Sean, you know, probably would never have played for England, never played for the clubs that you guys played for, white journalists who don't articulate the game as well as Carl does. You could stick them all on the same TV show and no one would bat an eyelid because it's just like looking in the mirror for them.
You know, the thing as well though, with that, Rai, is that what really does feel very, it's very sad for me, is the just the blatant disrespect of everything we've done on that to be able to sit on the chair. And what I would love to, and speak about football, what I would love to say to that guy and people who've got the same kind of persuasion is, what are you afraid of, man?
Yeah.
Because, you know, what are you afraid of? It doesn't come down to as basic as, do you think that black people are going to get into a situation where they're powerful and then what? Start treating white people like we've been treated for hundreds and hundreds of years or something? Like the invisible racism and oppress you and this. I said, what are you? I'd love to know what they're afraid of. You know, I watched last night, which was unbelievable, Rai.
Was it Cars again?
No.
The amount of times I
Cars again.
Just randomly in the middle of the day and I just hear Wrighty going, Lightning McQueen.
No. No, it was the Super Bowl that wasn't, the one in Arizona. That was just so interesting. I really loved watching that. Talk about 1993. The way that people came together. This is what I will always be very infused and excited about, is the way that you just see all the colors meshed into the ante. For me, that's what gives me joy when I see that, because I know that people want change. They do want change. And even now people want change. Even you speak, I guarantee if we was able to speak to the guy who put that comment on, Carl, about the diversity hire in his flippant throwaway manner, and you sat down with me, him, you and Sean and spoke to him, I guarantee you that guy would leave the vicinity and he would admire us.
Yeah.
And so why can't people get into that headspace instead of thinking, you know, oh, a diversity hire?
Can I take a positive example? Please. Wrighty's House. You know, I'm the only white person involved in what is essentially a black show. There are five contributors, four of them are black. You, Musa, Carl, Jeanette.
And our white brother.
Me.
And if it was a five-side if it was a five-side team?
I'd be in goal. Thank you very much. If it was a five-a-side team, you'd play with four and I'd be on the bench. There you go.
You'd be our rush goalkeeper.
It's weird kind of bigging up a show you're involved with, but people hit me up about it all the time. My dad adores this show. Oh, he's a 66-year-old white guy. Not once has he ever brought up the fact that it's a predominantly black show. It's not a thing. I've never seen it in any show notes or anything that anyone's written about it or any feedback, anything. And that to me is where we speak, obviously, like, my opinion as a straight white guy, which I understand is secondary to the people who actually have to go through this on a daily basis. But in my opinion, that's where we need to get to on the whole, where that isn't a thing that people notice anymore. It's not a thing. It doesn't matter. Because for me, you were mentioning that thing before about this, like the Super Bowl thing. like there's something really joyful about diversity.
It does feel real, bro. It's beautiful, man.
It's just better. It's and yeah. I think that when people realize that,
we're meant to get along. We're all meant to get along.
It can be so easy to be afraid, and it can be so easy to think there's just not enough space for all of us.
Afraid of what? What they're afraid of? I'd love to speak to people to find out what they think is going to happen.
One of the most powerful tools I have in my life nowadays is asking people, who told you that? So when people tell me about Colin Kaepernick, it's taken a knee for so-and-so reason, or people are telling me certain things about Black Lives Matter and this, what I often go is, who told you that? And I go, what? I said, who told you that, you know, Black people want to do this and this and this and this and this? I say, who told you that? And I'm like, oh, I don't know. And you say, okay, so you don't know, but you have this idea in your head. I'm going to help you get that out of your head and tell you what actually is going on. Because there's so much fear in this world, I feel. You can really, and especially now in lockdown and whatnot, and I definitely feel as if some of these social media comments have gotten worse because of lockdown. We're all trapped in our houses a little bit, or feel trapped, right? You can feel as if there's only so much to go around. And if someone's got something in their hand, that means you don't have something in your hand. And that's scary.
Yeah.
And I think, you know, fear can be a really hard feeling to push past. But when you push past that, you start asking yourself questions. What am I afraid of? Why am I afraid of this? Why do I think this? When you push past it, the world is so much bigger and has the potential for so much more amazing things. And has the potential for so many more connections if you just push past your knee-jerk, scared reactions. And I
push past this is a diversity higher.
Yeah.
Push past that, man.
I don't believe this every day, but I do believe deep down things are getting better. I do believe, you know, Righty's House episode 30, we're going to be talking about this again, possibly, but we're going to have more listeners that go, I remember Righty's House episode 15 and I thought about this and I thought about this and it challenged this way. And even though the steps might be small, as long as we keep going in a direction.
Take the steps, man.
Yeah, man. That's
absolutely
it.
Absolutely.
This episode is brought to you by Lincoln in the all-new 2024 Nautilus Hybrid. Featuring a customizable 48-inch panoramic display, available Revel audio system, and available perfect position front seats with active motion massage. Oh my God. The world isn't wide enough. Visit Lincoln.com to learn more. Some models, trims, and features may not be available or may be subject to change. Check with your local retailer for current information. Lincoln and Nautilus are trademarks of Ford or its affiliates. This episode is brought to you by Major League Baseball. A lot is going on in the world of sports right now, but don't forget the 2024 baseball season. It's officially here. Some pretty exciting things to look forward to. Can the star-studded Dodgers, can they make the World Series? Can Mookie Betts break my heart again? How about the young Orioles? How about the defending champs, the Rangers, trying to become the first back-to-back champs in over two decades? See how far they'll go. Get in on the action by visiting your local ballpark or any ballpark, or you can just go to MLB.com, tap the banner to learn more. Baseball is something else.
When I was watching the game, the Arsenal Man United game, I was just so afraid because I know Man United start pretty slowly and I was hoping that we'd start a lot quicker. But then when you watch the game, it just looked like two teams that were doing, remember that? What was that? What was that? That meme?
The GIF.
Remember the GIF? Remember the gift you said?
The two kids with the karate.
When I was watching it, I just could not stop thinking about the two kids with the karate. And then you're watching the game, and now because you know you're playing those games, you know that at some stage, someone's going to get an unbelievable chance. Someone's going to get a chance. It's because it doesn't take much in that game because the players are so good that it's all about a movement and the right ball because the players on the pitch is able to execute that pass, and there's players on there who can make the run, like Cavani, Bruno Fernandes, Pogba, you know what I mean, with Smith Rowe can make that run, it's Lacazette and that. But like, it just felt to me like it wasn't quite happening. But then the chances what Cavani had for Cavani were the kind of chances that you think, if he takes those, Carl, man, like people say, well, yeah, they didn't play particularly well, but they won the game and they should win the game. That's why Cavani starts that game for me. And I think that was two massive misses from him. And I was quite pleased because I've seen Cavani in the past and I've seen him some glaring misses. You know he's got that in him. But the way he missed that first, the first one where he missed the whole goal, Leno was actually outside of the goal.
Mm-hmm. It was like the Mikel Antonio one against Palace last week.
Yes.
Where he hit the post.
He hit the post, yeah.
It was basically like a carbon copy of it, wasn't it? Because I think the only thing was it's just the ball came at him at such pace, like Antonio. He just couldn't shape his body enough.
Yeah, but I think this is the thing with that one, right? And this is why it's one of those that you know, when people talk about a striker and he's going through it. What do you do? That's the kind of thing you do in training. No goalkeeper, no one. You just get somebody smacking the ball into you, and then you do the basic stuff to get it on target. So you get your knee over the ball. You make sure it goes in. And mm-hmm. in that situation, you still miss when there's no one in there. But what it makes you do, it makes you focus on the exact thing you have to do for that to come in. Because the way the ball came into him, guys, is he literally just had to open his foot a bit. So much pace on it. But he didn't open his foot enough. And what I love about you not doing it right, no matter how close you are, if you do not do the basics right, then you're going to miss. And what happened was he didn't open his foot enough. It's that simple. We're talking about fractions, bro.
But I mean, Cavani's always been a really interesting. He's got a similar thing to younger Higuain, where his movement is so good. Like Cavani's movement is so good, it will look like he can score two goals every single game.
Easily, just off his movement.
When he was at Napoli, it looked like he could get a hat-trick every game. I remember there was a Champions League game when he was at PSG against Arsenal, and it looked as if he could have scored five goals because his movement was just unreal. And Cavani's movement's always been one of the best of the generation and whatnot. And his finishing is okay to good, right? So he will look like he can score a hat-trick every game, and then he will probably get you one.
You know the thing with him as well, Carl? You know what the thing with him is, right? Is that he's the striker that, if he was more clinical, because you look at the amount of goals he's scored, and it's still phenomenal. But if he was more clinical with how he finishes, he could score goals without actually, you know, when you, as a striker, you want a shot where you run through one-on-one with a keeper or something like that. He can score goals just off his movement. So then, like you say there, Carl, could score sometimes. He's somebody that could score five and six in a game because just off of his movement, he can get tap-ins. And then if he's really clinical on a particular day and he takes his one-on-ones because his movement is so good. And when I was watching him again the other day, even his movement for the second one, which was, people think that, yeah, he's just like, he's on a 6 yard box, he's a yard out, but he got in there so quickly that the ball was behind him. So he was trying to actually hook it in. Now, that again, we're talking about fractions because you don't miss that if it's an easy chance. It's not an easy chance. Just like the first one would say, people say it's an easy chance. It's only an easy chance because of his proximity to the goal. But the way that ball comes in, you cannot take it for granted that all you've got to do is connect. Never, ever do that.
You once used this description for a defender. You said sometimes a defender can come in too hot.
Yeah.
Which I really like using that one every now and again, is when you charge into the box and you're too hot and you're not quite at the same temperature as everything else.
Yeah.
And I think, well, I remember you saying that, I went, yeah, that's nice. Yeah.
Come charging too hot.
Yeah, I think Cavani charged in too hot for that second chance. That game was so, I mean, both teams had quite obvious weaknesses. So apparently partway through the game, Solskjaer told Rashford about Cedric. He went, he cannot defend. He went, he cannot defend. Run at him if you want. Mm. And Rashford did two or three times, but he didn't quite get to the ball the same way he wanted. And in the same way, you know, Aaron Wan-Bissaka getting a lot better going forward. But if you can get across behind him, there are some weaknesses. And I felt as if Arsenal were trying to test it, but they couldn't quite test it well enough. And it was that sort of thing where, again, like it's two kids doing karate. There's a very obvious weakness, but no one can quite hit it.
It looked like, I said on Stadio as well, it kind of looked like there was a point where, I think I tweeted about it as well, that people, both sides almost looked too scared to take control of the game.
That's exactly what it was,
right? For fear of like losing control, even though they weren't really in control. So it was just like, it's a bit like Spider-Man Mimi.
Yeah.
It's like, you go first.
You go first.
What you said, Carl, about Aaron Wan-Bissaka was really interesting because I think that was where Arsenal, you noticed that if Arsenal had had Tierney and Aubameyang down that left-hand side, or even Saka, really, down the left. Because that has been a real thing that Arsenal have targeted a lot this season, the left-hand side, even going back to last season when they would start scoring the Arsenal goal that they did a few times. It would always be worked out left, back out to the keeper, out right, and then the switch would be made right to left. And it would catch people off guard all the time. You really notice that without three of their key players that were missing on the weekend.
Mm. I think they, if they play, I think if them three play, I think we at least score. What we've got to take from that is, I was afraid in that game because Man United, for me, the players that they had out, they're supposed to do a lot more to us than they did. A lot more.
When I was looking at the pass map after the game, you kind of, just looking at them, if someone had said which teams are which, I think I would have put them the other way around.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Because Man United had way more completed passes and the actual pass maps is very similar to what Arsenal's have been this season. Whereas Arsenal's, you could actually see the amount of attempted longer passes that Arsenal were training. It was like Arsenal were clearly playing, trying to catch Man United on the break.
Yeah.
And I think that was actually quite smart from Arteta. I think if you've seen this season, you know, the biggest catfish in the whole Premier League is that Arsenal have the second best defense record. And no one's talking about it. I feel like the guy like in Always Sunny in Philadelphia. And I'm just like, look at the defensive stats. Look.
Ollie and Arteta are really interesting. I'm not going to say polar opposites, but they've got some really interesting approaches as to how they want to play football, right? So Arteta is very much, let's build from the back, let's get our base fundamentals in there. And you can see he's trying to build Arsenal like a house. You start with your foundations and then build. And then Ollie's approach has very much been, I'm going to be a bit more reactive and steer into the skid. And I think Manchester United were very much, you know what? At some point, the defense doesn't really matter because we've got all these weapons up front. So let's just fine tune that and get clobbering people. So it's the reverse. And I think
channel your inner Keegan.
Yeah. And then, you know, I'm not going to say each one's right or wrong because there are some points where Manchester United look amazing and there's some points where they don't. And some points where Arsenal look amazing and some points they don't.
Yeah.
And it's just that very interesting approach to, and this is why we all still watch football and we'll watch football for 20, 30, 50 years and not get bored because there's always something, right? Mm. And even it doesn't necessarily have to be new, but these things keep changing and there's more than one way to win a football game. And there's more than one way to get things done. And then sometimes just weird stuff happens, right?
You know,
you've got one manager going, score, and we'll figure out later. And you've got another guy going, X's and O's, and we'll figure out the other stuff later.
Yeah, it's a bit like techno and jazz, man, I think. Like Arteta needs like a good, you know, 16-bar kick drum before anything kind of really happens. Yep. So it's just like, oh, and then we'll bring the pads in. And then, you know, whereas like Ollie's just like, give me a C.
Yes, let's work with that, man. When I watch like the game, see like the Willian chance, and what I love about football, especially when you're going through a certain phase, and you have to say at the moment, Willian's going through a phase where I think that even though fans are not in there, you tend to feel that they're not having him right now, simply because they just want more. They just want more. You can't blame them. But at the same time, what I love about football, and when he's playing, it will give you the opportunity to redeem yourself. And then what it comes down to is how confident am I to do what I know I can do? Mm-hmm. So when that chance goes to Willian, even just the way he kind of like controllable to finish it, I just thought he's not scoring that. I just felt like he's not scoring that. And as much as it looked like, yeah, he's close and he's got to take, can he do it quicker? It just seemed to be somebody who was going through the steps in his head. Let me control it. Let me get it here. Let me do it. That's too long.
It kind of reminded me of like when he first started playing FIFA after ages. He's like, I forgot what the finesse button was. And he just like pass it straight to the keeper.
And it's like when you saw Mo Salah's goal. Touch and finish, right? This is what I'm talking about where, you know what that reminded me of, the Mo Salah goal, in respect of somebody just on pure instinct and just raw ability, is a goal what Suarez scored against Newcastle. Left back hit it about 50 yards. He controlled it on his shoulder, on his knee.
Yeah, went around the keeper.
And it was all in a movement. Salah's touch and finish in that game. And again, right, I have to go back to what you say about the celebration because the fans are not there. He probably celebrates unbelievably if fans are there. But because it feels like a training ground situation and a reserve football match, he's just done something that is what you pay to see. Mm-hmm. You pay to see that. And like, he's just like, yeah, cheers, thanks. Blah, blah, blah. Almost genius how he's done it. Almost genius.
I thought watching that he kind of it looked like a little bit like, have I just done that?
The technique and everything in that, and the mind is working so quickly, because remember, the ball's coming from where it's coming from, and the touch with the outside of his foot as well, with his left foot, and then to finish as quickly was fantastic. I saw some great finishes this weekend. Harvey Barnes's finishes as well. Harvey Barnes's finish was brilliant, the way he took that. Patrick Bamford, we're going to mention Patrick Bamford's, his one was brilliant, but Harvey Barnes's one, it just went bam, bam, and shot so quickly with his last two touches that you think to yourself, I wish I was playing.
I love those touch, those goals where it's almost like you don't have to take an extra step after your control. It's like all one movement.
All about the touch.
Sometimes, man, it just happens where it's like, oh, actually, it's easier just to hit this now. But it looks so good.
It looks
good.
So beautiful. I'm going to tell Musa, I'm going to do a book. In the end, it's all about the touch.
Yes.
I'm doing it. It's got to be, because what you want to show kids and what you want to show people is that if you focus hard, really hard on the first touch, it makes everything easy. I had to explain the other day to somebody about Callum Wilson's second goal against Everton.
Yeah, how I found that a really interesting.
It shouldn't have happened. The goal should not have happened. He should not have been able to score. And because it was Pickford, it was. I remember when the ball came into him, guys, and his touch was bad, I thought, ah, he's missed the chance. And then when you look at what Pickford does, Pickford's natural reaction is, because when a goalkeeper sees someone with that much time that he's coming, he's going to bear down on him, all that the goalkeeper has, I need him to have a bad touch. That will give me the extra yard I need to get closer. So he has the bad touch. Pickford goes and stops. So he kind of negates his whole, the space he's meant to close down. And then he's out of whack with the where he is in respect of the angle of the goal. So when you look at it, Callum Wilson takes the touch. It's a bad touch. And then the ball gets in his feet. But because Pickford stopped, Pickford should be right in his face by now. But because Pickford stopped, Callum Wilson's then been able to get the ball out his feet, look up, and Pickford's left the whole right side of the goal because he's lost his angles. And this is when I watched it, I thought to myself, you know something? That's poor goalkeeping.
Mm. Man, it's one of the rare occasions where you're actually like, Pickford needs to be more hype.
He has to. His instincts told him, you know what I mean? I'm looking at the touch is bad. So what happens, let me explain to people, and I don't want to act like people don't know football, or I'm speaking to somebody, but speak to somebody who hasn't got an absolute clue. But sometimes you have to speak to somebody when you're trying to explain that. I always talk like I'm speaking to an 8-year-old or a 9-year-old.
This is a TED talk, man.
Right? Yeah, I'm trying to explain, to you that you are playing chicken with the goalkeeper. The goalkeeper is waiting for you to have the bad touch. Mm. Jordan Pickford, he had the bad touch. He's supposed to go and close that space. And I remember watching Gabriel Martinelli against Chelsea when Kante slipped, right? And it was elite, right? It was elite. He had like 4, maybe 5 elite touches of football at pace. Mm-hmm. So what happens when he goes through, if you can remember that goal, Kante slips and he's from the halfway line. So all the time he's thinking, so he's away from home, the crowd are there, he's thinking, your touch, if your touch, all the goalkeeper needs there is for you to have a bad touch. You have to have it at some stage, because when you have a bad touch, which was meant to happen to Callum Wilson, at some stage, you've got to look for where the ball is, because it's not where you want it to be because your touch has been bad. So now you have to find the ball. Oh, it's over there. That time, oh, it's over there, is where the goalkeeper should be coming to close you. So when you look up, your angles have changed. You've missed the opportunity. Gabriel Martinelli had 4 unbelievable touches. By the time he got to the goalkeeper couldn't do anything and he just slotted it past him. That's what good touches do.
And they matter all around the football pitch.
Yeah. Oh, yeah.
If you can take one touch that essentially does the job of what 2 touches would normally do, when you get down to like 5-a-side level or whatever kind of thing, then you've bought yourself an extra second.
Yeah. And the great players do it naturally.
Yeah. And if, at the back, for example, it's really key, especially now with passing out the back. Keepers, essential.
Ball at their
feet. And strikers. It was a goal on the weekend. Oh, it was Lorient's winner against PSG. Mm-hmm. It's not really a touch, but it's in the last minute. PSG have all pushed up for a winner. And it's one of those where the camera pans out and you're like, oh, they've got no one back. And he's clean through. And he does the thing where he puts across
the defender
just outside the box. Mm-hmm. Because it's kind of win-win then, isn't it?
Yeah.
That movement it's completely taken that defender out of the picture, even though he's half a foot behind you. Can't do anything.
Can't do anything, yeah. Dave Seaman, we used to talk about finishing. I found it more interesting talking about it. And then Dave Seaman would stand on the side with Bob Wilson and I'd go through and I'd say, what about this angle here? He says, well, all I'm thinking is, right, I know my angle now. Now I'm hoping that you have a bad touch. I need you to have a bad touch because that's going to give me the extra yard to come closer. So when you look up, I'm bigger. And that's with Salah's finish. With Salah's finish, the goalkeeper, where the ball was coming from, the goalkeeper is definitely thinking, okay, once he's had his touch, I'll be able to get there because it's coming from such a lot. But the touch is so great and then the other touch is so quick, and that's what the great players can do. It just negates you. So the goalkeeper's got literally no chance. And that's why it looked easy, because his touch made it easy. No one could do anything because the touch was so good. Defender can't get close enough. Goalie can't close down. All he's got to do is just flick it into that corner. Yeah. And that is
all. Set.
It's exactly. They're not set.
Was it Traore's against West Brom?
Yes. That's beautiful. I remember we spoke about it.
Yeah. Traore's like, it was a classic thing that Musa always brings up as well, like the George Weah head down, hits it before the keeper's set his feet.
Yes. The keeper can't set his feet. And these are the things that when you watch finishing and that, like I say, like when I watched Cavani's one, I thought, it's just like, even at that level, you can get the basics wrong and you can miss from a yard out.
I have a question about that second Cavani one where...
It was a bit behind him, that one.
Do you think he should have left it for Martial?
Yeah, he should have. Yeah, but that's, again, Martial and the fact that he doesn't command that area. You know, because for me, if someone's going in and Shearer's coming behind him or someone like, even if I was coming behind somebody, I would make them know I'm on. I'd make them know, because that is a proper tapping for Martial, which I thought that some of his runs in that game were so basic and poor. Cavani would run in there and he'd run in behind him instead of, right, oh, Cavani's going there, let me peel out behind. Or Cavani's here, let me dart across him. It's so basic what he does that it makes me think, do you actually work on movement at all? Because he's right behind him. Simply, it looks like he's somebody who's just, I'm going to run in there with my big brother's going in there. I'm going to run in there as well. He's copying him. Because what he should have done was, is that Cavani was getting to go in for that, Cavani should have came out and he should be going in because he's in a better position, because he's coming onto it better. Cavani is overshot. He's overshot because that's why in the end he's off balance. The ball's behind him. He's trying to flick it in with the right foot into the left hand post, and it was a simple chance for Martial. But Martial hasn't got the command of the box for Cavani to leave it. He's not going to leave that.
There's a really good piece for Anthony Martial that I think people should maybe read. By a young lad.
Do we know
Carl Anker? From The Athletic.
What is it? Tell me about it. Have you already done it?
I've already done it. I wrote a piece about Martial and why he's can very often stand in the wrong place. Mm. And I think one thing about Martial last season, I mean, throughout his career, was he always had above average finishing. And you always had that, you know, when it was Martial FC, it was because he could always just get a bit of magic out of somewhere. And he could do those, like, how have you done that? Mm. So even when his movement wasn't great, or when his defensive ability wasn't amazing, even when things were going really bad, he knew he could still get something out of nothing. And now his finishing boots have left him a little bit, and it's all the other weaknesses have come to the fore. It will come back. Right? Martial is one of those players where I think it's one of those things where you can get finishing back. It's just a case of getting your arm around you and having someone take you through the steps. And you've talked about this, Ian, as well, about finishing ability and how you need to start practicing, constantly getting it back in. But you do worry when your strong point is one thing that you have to be born with and your weaknesses are things that need to be coached. In theory, it should be fine. But you do go, come on, mate. He'll come. He's got good relationships with people like Pogba and Rashford. Can I ask you one more thing about finishing? Because you mentioned about full-back finish. They showed a clip of your goal against Everton. And you said it's a fall over.
You have to
finish.
Fall away. You have to fall away to get the angle to the far post. Because what happened with Callum Wilson? Is he went round the goalkeeper, but he was too close. He got too close to the ball, and there was two occasions where he could have done a finish where he just whipped it across himself with his left foot. Because if you're standing next to it, it's going to be hard to get the angle on your foot to try and get it in. That's why in the end, he hit the outside of the post. So once he went past the goalkeeper first, he should have instantly just with his left foot hit it and fell away like that. That gives him the angle to the far post.
So like a fadeaway in basketball,
fade
man.
Fadeaway, bro. That's what it is. So then you get the angle. So then you get the angle, Carl, because like if you try to stand up and mm-hmm. then remember the goal, the angle of the goal is going like that all the time. It's moving away from you like that. So till it comes like you can see a line. Mm-hmm. And so by the time he gets there, he's trying to contort his body to whip his left foot under the ball to get it into the goal, but it's going past the near post. Whereas if you do the fall over before you get there, you can get a longer stretch on your leg and you can aim for the far post and then it probably go in the middle of the goal.
I feel really sorry for everyone listening because we got a full visual demonstration of that as well. At one point, I thought it was just like, is Wright doing the robot?
This episode is brought to you by Hotels.com. I was traveling internationally last year. I was in Mallorca. I didn't know the island well. I said, let me head to the north, head towards the water. Let me go on Hotels.com and see what they have available. Something preferably on the beach, maybe even a gym. Not only did I get those things, there was a kids session with exercise, gymnastics in the water, pony rides, a train. It had everything, and I didn't even want any of those things. But at least I knew they were there, just in case I changed my mind. And now finding the perfect hotel has never been easier thanks to the Hotels.com app. Whether you're looking for a family-friendly, right, all-inclusive, or a relaxing spa weekend, you can find exactly what you need and compare hotel prices, ratings, and amenities side by side. So start planning your next getaway and find your perfect somewhere in the Hotels.com app.
I think the best finish this weekend, obviously, I think Mo Salah's touch was amazing. It's a great finish. But Patrick Bamford's finish. Patrick's getting flowers, by the way, right now. He's somebody that I admire greatly. He was another one of those players that was involved with me at MK Dons when I was down there. So I always take credit for him and Delhi, whatever they do. So he was there and I used to do a lot of finishing with Patrick Bamford because his left foot is so good. And when I saw the way he finished that one, it was so good. At first, when he went through on it, I'm thinking, just hit it. Ball was spinning nicely. And when he hit it, it just kept moving away from Casper. It was so good. It was just beautiful, man.
It was crisp.
Yeah, it was crisp and lovely.
Quietly satisfying.
Like even with the pass, for example, like the assist.
You know, the assist it's perfect, Rye. I heard you speak about it. And you know what's good about that is that you'll get some strikers and some people who would want to finish that themselves. And like you mentioned there was 6 minutes to go and against a team like Leicester as well, who I thought were, especially for that goal, so lackadaisy. Remember, that came from their free kick. And for him to square it to him and finish the game, it was brilliant execution simply because it literally kills Leicester off. It inside them, they've been like, that's it, it's over.
In the NBA, they call it the dagger.
Honestly.
That's like 6 points up and a 3-pointer with 20 seconds to go. Is that, there's the dagger.
That's football intelligence as well. Sometimes you see people go through and like they've scored a goal and their partner's in and, you know, there's still like 5-10 minutes to go in the game and they don't square it, finish the game. Because not only what happens when you do square it, he gets the score and then because the other team's now deflated, you might get another one. And then you could go through and then you could take the chance on finishing yourself because you've got a two-goal cushion. And what I love about what he done there is that he finished the game. But Leicester got Leicestered, bro, by Leeds. Yeah. They Leicestered them, especially when you look at the second goal. I saw Mendy. So it went out to the left and Mendy was the holding midfielder. This is one thing to myself. When you watch the video back, I must be embarrassed. Mendy, Soyuncu, I think it might have been Pereira as well. All dived in. Mendy dived in on the line. Soyuncu went and dived in on the line. And then Pereira, with the last pass before it went to the left-hand side, he dived in. So then they just ran through on goal. And you think to yourself, could have been so avoided. But Leeds was so good. Leeds was so good. And sometimes there's something about Leicester that I do like. But then all of a sudden, it's just like they're juggling and it's going brilliantly and then bam, everything just falls. And no Jamie Vardy.
I think that's a lot of the season as well, though. I think that just, I mean, I understand that people who listen to the Ringer FC feed are probably bored of me making excuses for footballers this season. But I just do think that, like, you know, with Everton, for example, losing home to Newcastle.
Newcastle just, were very good, though.
They were very good. But also on paper, it's kind of like, on paper, there are no surprising results at the moment because...
Any night can be your night.
It's just, and it's all so over the place.
But where did that performance come from with Newcastle? Simply because they haven't been playing like that. This is what
it was. It was the Bielsa, man. It was Bielsa bigging Steve Bruce up.
You know, balls.
But it was just like, you could see, like, Bielsa's the kind of guy, isn't he? Just to be like, you can imagine Bielsa just loving Steve Bruce. Yeah. It's just one of those things. It's like Pep and Eddie Howe or something like that. You know, it's like, yeah, of course you love Eddie Howe.
Steve's a lovely man. Yeah. Lovely.
Speaking of people, yeah, and like Bielsa loves Bamford. That's, oh my god, one of the, you know, most amazing like manager player exactly. relationships in the Premier League.
It's
like
beautiful. Because faith, right?
Yeah, like I can just imagine them hanging out together and not speaking. I mean, they're just like being in each other's company.
But I remember seeing a goal what he scored in practice. Did you see that one, Rye? What Bamford scored in practice, and Bielsa, he walked something like 15, 20 yards to hug him. I think, especially when you look at what Bamford's been through, like what 6 loan moves, you know, some of the things, even when Sean Dyche was talking about his upbringing and the fact that he's, you know, private school stuff, all stuff that is absolutely meaningless to a footballer in respect to what he's doing on the pitch. Mm. You know, talking about Palace fans, how he runs. Oh, I don't like the way he runs. Oh, I don't like, you know, he's been through so much in his short space of time. People talking about him not being able to do that. He'll never be able to turn into a Premier League striker. The Leeds fans as well got to get a lot of credit as well for sticking with him, even when you looked at some of those games what he played in. And he did miss some really, really easy chances. But the manager stuck with him. And I'm not sure if you can look too many places and find a manager with that much faith in a player that you could have dropped at any stage in the last 3 years or whatever it was. Any stage, and no one would have said, oh, that's a bit out of order. He's stuck with him, and now look, he's 5 goals off his best tally, and he's probably going to score more.
Yeah.
He's probably going to score
more. It's so nice when you just see a player land somewhere finally.
Oh, yes. God, it's so
it's
happy.
It's just really him. Just like, yeah, no. You know, like, you can just imagine them kind of looking around and being like, no, this feels like home.
Bamford's got to get flowers.
I think the subject of this podcast is less hate, more hugs.
Absolutely, man. Like Musa said, bro, in the end, it's all about football.
Usually for Musa, in the end, it's all about some kind of sweet goods.
Guys, thank you so much. You know what, guys? You've cheered me up. Ryan Hunt, thank you very much. Carl Anker, thank you so much. I'll be seeing you guys soon again.
Yeah, for sure.
Nice one, man. Thanks a lot, man. Thanks for coming. I love you. Thank you very much for joining us on Righty's House. Hope you enjoyed the show again. Thanks to Ryan Hunt and Carl Anker of The Athletic. We'll see you again next week. Stay safe, guys. Stay safe and be as happy as you can be. God bless. Take it easy.